Welcome to Healthcare IT Today. I'm John Lin, together with my colleague and friend, Colin Hung. The world of technology and healthcare are ever-changing in new and novel ways. That's why we love this stuff so much. So join us as we discuss the latest healthcare and health IT news meshed together in new ways, which help generate ideas and new perspectives. Plus, we'll have a little fun along the way. On today's episode, we'll be talking about the new regulations that came out about information blocking. Today's episode is sponsored by Onyx. Take a minute to participate in their healthcare cloud survey at healthcareittoday.com/cloud survey. All participants will be entered to win a Google Pixel Slate. Again, that's healthcareittoday.com/cloud survey, all one word, cloud survey, all lowercase. And also be sure to follow the show on Twitter at the hashtag HITSM and our personal accounts at TechGuy and at Colin_Hung. Plus, check out our 13 years of Health IT blog content at healthcareittoday.com. How you doing, Colin?
I'm great. And who would have thought that we would be excited to talk about a regulation?
I mean, it's true. Healthcare is regulated, but this is a doozy. I mean, this is some big news. I think it's the biggest news we've had since Meaningful Use came out.
I think so. I think we're going to get into that. In fact, here are today's topics. We're going to talk about the regulation itself, specifically about the 7 exceptions to the rule, as you called it, as well as the API fees. And then we're going to move right away to talk about this new term that the government has put out called electronic health information, or EHI exporting, and what that means for the industry. We're then going to talk about enforcement, or maybe lack thereof, and implications this whole rule has for healthcare in general. So that's today's discussion.
Awesome.
All right, let's dive right into it, John. So information blocking, what is it, and what are these things called API fees that are being proposed?
Well, it's interesting that this was called the information blocking because it packs a lot more than that. But certainly that was one of the critical elements that HHS had told us for a while, and ONC had told us for a while that, hey, we're going to attack information blocking in every way we can. And what they essentially did is they said, not only are we not going to just say, here's the ways we think you should share, they're going to come from a perspective of, we assume you're going to share, and here's 7 exceptions where, hey, you may actually not want to share. But those exceptions are few and far between. I mean, they're obvious things like preventing harm, right? So you could, which that one has some interpretation, but obviously there's certain instances where maybe you shouldn't share some information. There's some complicated ones in the behavioral health environment where I think some of that makes sense. And then there's a few other exceptions as far as, promoting the security of EHI, another one that will be interesting to see how it's interpreted, to protect the different actors and mitigate any security risks. And also if it's really expensive or it's just infeasible to share. I mean, when it's something that broad, you can see they're essentially saying to the market, you better share and you better have a good reason not to share if you're not going to, which, that's, I think, the message from the information blocking. And the interesting part is that EHRs are going to have to attest that they're able to do this.
Yeah, I know. I found that we haven't had the opportunity to go through all 1,000 pages of the rules and regulations yet. It's quite a tome. But you're right. The fundamental assumption that the government is now making is that sharing is the default. And you actually have to come up with very specific conditions in which not to share, and which you just described a couple. The one that's most interesting to me is the one where it's prohibitively expensive and difficult to do. I can totally see that causing some issues, especially when, let's say, that company that made that repository is no longer in business, right? I mean, you can reasonably say, okay, that may be an instance where sharing is going to be very, very hard. But I think what they're definitely targeting is these stories that have come out over the last little while, and they are stories because some of them are unverified, about, some companies just charging exorbitant fees for people to move information out of their system to somewhere else. And, I think the government's taking a clear aim at those practices and going, oh, that's not the case anymore. You're going to have to share it.
Well, and I think that's the other part of it, right? Is that, you know, it's one thing to block and literally just not even create the functionality. It's another to charge someone so much that you're essentially blocking them from the information because it costs so much to access the information. And that's where I think the allowed API fees section of the regulation, and we should note that it's proposed legislation. So there's, I think, 60 days that are open for people to provide feedback. But the allowed API fees is essentially saying you better only charge what's reasonable for you to provide that service, and you shouldn't be charging for EPHI, which, you know, technically was already the rule before this legislation, but it will be abundantly clear now. Although what's interesting is that it did allow for fees related to what they called value-added services. I think that's going to be open to a lot of interpretation and discussion. I think it will be interesting to see how people, you know, try to maneuver these type of allowed API fees, because the intent of ONC is very clear. You should not create a profit center around the sharing of health information. If you do, then they're going to come after you. Now, that doesn't mean people aren't going to try to, right? There's a lot of money to be made in that. So, you know, I think it will be really interesting to see how people get around this or how people comply with this type of regulation.
Yeah, I think that's pretty good distinction to make. You know, it's not saying you can't charge to get the information. What they're saying is you can't charge these exorbitant fees for it. So yeah, I'm agree with you. I think it'll be very interesting to see how companies can bundle other services like analytics, like interpretation of the data that they've gathered, you know, on top of the actual sharing of data. Because there I see those are reasonable, right now anyways, reasonable added value services that could be charged for. But it will be pretty interesting to see how that industry shakes this particular interpretation out.
Yeah, and then, you know, kind of moving on to the next topic around patients' access to it, they essentially said patients shouldn't have to pay for this information, which I think will be interesting to see the response from AHIMA and the various HIM professionals along this lines, because there is work related to, really producing the legal health record, as they call it. And so, you know, that's going to be an interesting one, although I think the distinction that ONC wants to make is that, hey, if I can access that information through the EHR, through a portal, I should be able to do it at no cost, because you didn't have to go ahead and figure out what the legal health record is. You can still charge the insurance company and the lawyers, all of them that want this very specific set of data. That seems still reasonable and in place. But if it's the patient, you need to provide, I think the exact terms are, all EHI, which is electronic health information, produced and electronically managed by a developer's health IT, must be available to export. So anything that is a certified EHR has to have all of that data exportable to the patient in a way that a machine could read it. In other words, that it can be used by another application. So, you know, that's going to be really interesting how that's exactly defined and how well this gets implemented by the various EHR vendors.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to unpack here in this particular part of the rule. There's, first of all, the not charging for the free access to the information itself. There's the what format the information is in. And then, of course, there's the, well, what do you do with it once you get it, right? The rule is trying, or ONC is really trying to come up, or HHS, sorry, it's really coming up with different ways or ways to interpret that. What I found most interesting about this was really the format. They really put some wind behind the HL7 standards sails by saying, look, fire standards, there's something that they're definitely going to stand behind. CCDA is definitely something they're going to stand behind. So there are some standards that they're endorsing. Now, they're not saying exclusively that those are the only ones, but they have made it clear that you can't just export gobbledygook. You have to give it in a format that someone can do something with it. So,
and it's interesting you mentioned those standards. I was talking to someone from HHS, and they indicated that, hey, you know, and I haven't dove into the specifics of the rule, but it was interesting their comment. They said, you know, in the past, it was almost developed to the bottom of what was acceptable, which was CCDA.
Right.
That's the bottom. But, what they said, at least what they told me, this person from HHS, is that, look, because they're also trying alluding to in this, and I, like I said, I haven't found the specific details, but it sounds like they're open to the idea that, okay, you could actually go something above CCDA, above FIRE, that's, you know, that's even more ambitious than that, and that they'd be okay with that. And that, that would still allow you to be a certified vendor if you did, you know, what CCDA and FIRE did, but then also take it to a new level. Like I said, I haven't dug into it, but it sounds interesting, because that has been my complaint with EHR certification since even before ONC existed, when it was like basically like, okay, now we code to the bottom of what's acceptable, rather than some EHR vendors being ambitious and doing it in a way that really is useful to the patient.
Yeah, no, and I agree with you there. It'll be interesting to see if EHR vendors decide to step up as opposed to just go to the minimum. I think initially, obviously, people are just going to go for the minimum, but the smart ones are going to realize, hey, you know, there's actually something to be said for sharing more information, for sharing it in a much easier format. And, you know, that will entice people to go with their particular applications. So, yeah, I'm curious to see the definitions over the next few months as they get refined. I certainly think there's going to be a lot of confusion at the beginning over what is and what isn't qualified in terms of a standard, and how easy it really has to be. But it goes back to what we were talking about before. You know, I think the key here is that, you know, the rule basically says you have to share EHI information all the time. Its default is to be shared. And if you don't, there's some pretty stiff penalties and non-certifications that'll happen, which of course is the next topic that we're going to talk about. But
yeah, but before we get there too, you're right though. I mean, it's not just to patients. The EHI export is also to physicians, right? Which is the other element of this, which is really interesting. So if a physician leaves one hospital health system provider group and moves to another, then you have to be able to export that information. I'm interested to see what's the format of that, and will it be enough that literally, you know, they don't need to make a chart request to their old organization if they decide to move practices. I hope it reaches that level, but that's quite a heavy lift for many EHR vendors. So I think many of them are saying, wow, that's going to be some work.
Well, yeah, and you know, you talked about the case where a physician, you know, moves from one facility to another, one system to another, and having the ability now to take the data with him or her. But there's also the case where, you know, a physician decides to switch vendors, right? And we all have heard the stories of vendors holding physicians hostage to the data. Well, that can't happen anymore. If I choose to switch from, you know, vendor A to vendor B, vendor A has to be able to export EHI information into a system-readable format, and hopefully, which then I can import into my new system. That will no longer be something that I can be held hostage to.
That's a great point. And to think about it, it's really the best interest of the patient, which is what they're really espousing here. Because I remember, you know, patients often follow doctors wherever they go, if they can, you know, as long as it's within their network and things. So they want to follow the doctor, then their information should be with that doctor too. Like, it doesn't make sense that if a doctor transfers, that doctor wouldn't still have access to that information. It's a shame that we even have to discuss it, honestly.
It's true. And, you know, just think about the cost implications, right? If I don't have that data, I'm going to order all the same tests again. I'm going to do all those things all over again. Whereas if I just was able to access that information, you could save the health system so much cost.
Yeah.
So, hey, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Healthcare IT Today with John Lin and Colin Hung. Today's episode is sponsored by Onyx, a leading healthcare cloud solutions provider. Sorry, they also do other industries, but I like the healthcare division. And since 1992, Onyx has used its expertise to solve clients' technology pain points across numerous sectors, like I said, including healthcare. Healthcare IT Today has teamed with Onyx to better understand the current state of cloud in healthcare. Take our survey and be entered for your chance to win a Google Pixel Slate tablet. Go to healthcareittoday.com/cloudsurvey, all one word, lowercase, and take the survey. It's only a few minutes, and we really appreciate your input.
Those Google Pixel Slates are awesome, too.
Yeah, I wish we were eligible to win, John. I wish we were eligible to win.
Yeah, I need one of those.
All right, let's move on to the next topic, and that is, of course, enforcement of this rule.
Yeah, so enforcement's always been a challenge, you know, and that's why I said this, I think, is probably one of the biggest pieces of regulation that's come out since meaningful use. ONC came out with a, was it the interoperability one? Like, here's some guidelines of things that might be interesting for you. I was like, who cares? Like, you can say whatever you want, but if you don't have any enforcement, if you don't have any teeth behind it, like, you can talk to your bulu in the face, but that doesn't change anything. But what's interesting about this regulation is there is some enforcement. And I actually, you know, look at it, ONC for the most part is using the EHR certification requirements as the enforcement mechanism. And for those that don't think that's a big deal and that they, if they don't implement it right, who cares? You know, it's just EHR certification. Well, just go and visit your friends at ECW who had a $155 million settlement for not doing the appropriate EHR certification requirements. And then the most recent, Greenway Health, doing a $57 million settlement for not doing the EHR certification requirements appropriately, right? So that's going to be a big deal. If EHR vendors don't comply with this new information blocking and EHI access, regulations, then it's really going to come back to bite them in the case of lawsuits and other fines associated with it. Plus, you know, I think there's also going to be an interesting to see what CMS ends up coming up with, because they're doing some enforcement around information blocking as well. And then, you know, obviously it depends on how OIG defines all of this. But at the end of the day, I think, you know, it behooves every EHR vendor organization to really take part in this and, you know, find out how they can comply, because if they don't, you know, it's going to come back to bite them and also the organizations that are with them.
Yeah, I think the certification route is a smart one for the government to go down, because I believe that the loss of reputation from failing to meet those standards is going to be worse than any fine that they can come up with, right? You know, if you're not able to meet the certification clause, I mean, you're basically signaling to your customers, hey, we didn't, you know, we're not good enough, we haven't invested enough in the product to do X, Y, or Z when the government has actually asked for it. I also think the wall of shame approach, which they've borrowed from the courts, the breach side of things, is also going to be very interesting, because their plan right now is to publish a list of products and of organizations that are information blocking, or that have not met these standards. So that's going to be an added incentive in terms of protecting your reputation as well. So I think the combination of two are just definitely going to be interesting at the beginning to see, you know, if people will comply with it or will live up to this. Of course, they've always left the door open to say there always could be penalties down the road for this, although they didn't specifically mention anything in there quite yet.
Yeah, well, the wall of shame comment is a really good one, because that's been my discussions with the various people at ONC and HHS, as they said, hey, we want to, you know, help stamp out information blocking, but if we don't have people sharing with us when the information blocking occurs, then it's harder for us to enforce it, and it's harder for us to know how we can regulate this. So any examples of that are going to need to come from the community who shares what's happening. You know, it'll be interesting to see if, you know, you could almost imagine a coalition of startups getting together and together reporting to ONC about information blocking that happens with a specific EHR vendor or a certified vendor that basically isn't allowing them to facilitate the use of that information by their organization. So, you know, we'll see if that plays out. You know, it's an interesting game of Russian roulette in some ways, right? Where, you know, you want them to open up the access to the information, but the, you know, if you have to go the legal route to get access to it, that's not a great way to create a relationship with someone who should be a partner. So hopefully everyone will get on board and start sharing the information as part of this regulation. But, you know, I think there's going to be a lot of interpretation that happens that's going to make it pretty challenging.
Yeah, you know, I'm interested to see how the mechanism, well, what the mechanism is that they're going to use to gather up all these complaints and requests, because unlike the breach, where it's fairly black and white, and it's sort of by law they have to report it. In this one, it's going to rely on a lot of, you know, physicians complaining, hospitals complaining, other vendors complaining, or making the case to say, hey, so-and-so is maybe blocking, or this may be an instance of blocking. But then it requires a little bit of investigation, right, to determine whether it is or it wasn't. Hopefully they're going to get the budget to for the people needed to investigate these, because I think it's in everyone's best interest to know who is really on that list. And therefore, you can make an educated choice when it comes to renewing or choosing that vendor in the first place, or that facility. To be honest, it's not always the vendor's fault. I mean, the vendor can actually produce it, but the, you know, might be blocked by some policy or procedure.
Yeah, and it will be interesting to see if the healthcare organizations really come to the EHR vendors and say, yeah, we want to open up this information and we want to ensure that we meet this, not just the letter of what's required for information blocking, but the intent that that information should be available to patients, that information should be available wherever the patient goes and wherever it's needed, and that we need to open that up for new innovations to come into the organization. So, you know, it behooves the healthcare organization to put the pressure on the EHR vendors, which they haven't done before. So, you know, that's going to be a change in perspective for them, and no doubt something the EHR vendors are going to have to balance if they're like, well, the regs require this and our clients want that. You know, that's a pretty hairy balance and negotiation that they're going to have to go through.
I totally agree. That kind of brings us to the last question, John, or the last discussion point, which is, what is the implication for the healthcare industry of this particular change?
Yeah, you know, it's early in the reading of this and in the implementing, you know, of how that will be implemented. That was actually probably if I read it right, you know, it seemed like it said that, you know, hey, this is to be implemented 2 years, which, you know, this is a proposed rule, so that could certainly be modified or changed. But I can't imagine anyone going and saying they want shorter, since the people who usually reply to this are the EHR vendors and they would rather have it 3 or 4 years. And no doubt, you know, you don't move the entire industry and many of these software products, especially the legacy ones that aren't cloud-based, you know, where the client gets to choose if they upgrade or not. That takes some time to implement, but to think that, you know, hey, if I read it right, I believe it's 2 years they have to implement many of the things that are in the regulations. And if that's the case, then, you know, we're still 2 years out from the information blocking to be updated in the software. On the one hand, that seems reasonable for an EHR vendor. On the other hand, it's like, wait, 2 more years of information blocking? That feels a little wrong, right?
Yeah, I think this certainly, I don't think, compares to what meaningful use was, because there's certainly not dollars involved in this where, you know, if you do something, you're going to get something. This is more if you don't do something, you won't get certified. But
which is why they're not motivated for a faster timeline either.
Right. But I do think this is a much needed spark for an industry that was kind of looking for something to drive it forward a little bit around interoperability. This doesn't solve interoperability by any stretch, but at least it gives impetus to a lot of organizations to share data in a standardized format or in a format that's readable by other machines and other systems. So from an interoperability standpoint, I think this is a big push forward. And I think anybody who has been, you know, part of the Commonwealth Alliance and all these other initiatives, I think are definitely applauding where the government is pushing towards. And I think that will spur a lot of development and investment in this area. You know, I think what the government's trying to do, and I, you know, what a lot of the talk around the show floors have been, you know, let's not just try to meet the minimum here. Let's not try to all just comply again and make the same mistake we did with meaningful use, where we all met this minimum standard to the exclusion of all other type of development. I think that's my hope, anyways, in terms of what will happen for the health IT industry.
Yeah, and the most hopeful thing I have is around the APIs. Yeah, I'm hoping that there really will be a true embrace of the API infrastructure. It just becomes clearer and clearer to me every day that if we really want to move the needle in healthcare IT, the EHR vendors aren't going to be able to produce all the innovation needed to improve healthcare as we know it. And so the only infrastructure that makes sense, and everyone wants to tie into the EHR, I mean, that's clear. Any startup company that's doing something innovative wants to tie into the EHR because it's the center of communication, it's the center of data for a healthcare provider. And so if they want their innovation to be effective, they need to tie into the EHR, and the API structure is the way to do that. And so you know, we really need the EHR vendors to embrace this idea of a full API that allows for the innovative companies to do it. You know, I always harken back to the genomic reference, you know, because every EHR vendor realizes, oh, no, I'm not doing genomics. You know, a lot of them look at other things like reminder services or scheduling services or other things like that and say, well, we might want to do that. But it's like, at the end of the day, there's hundreds of those services out there that could benefit them. And I think the EHR vendor needs to become the database of healthcare, as I've referenced it many times before, and let anyone hook into that database that needs to. Obviously, it needs to be a trusted source, but guess what? Their clients are not going to work with a vendor that they don't trust. So the clients are going to do the vending for the EHR vendors, and the clients are ultimately responsible for it. So we need to enable the clients, the provider organizations, to be able to work with whoever's innovative that they find and they trust and they vet to be able to interact with them. And it's not happening today in a lot of cases, or at least not to the extent that it should.
Yeah, I see two. Other, you know, to add on to what you're saying, John, I see two other implications for healthcare. One is, you know, it's a great time to be an interoperability platform vendor, right? Because everyone's going to be clamoring for those platforms, whether, you know, and we know who those are, to try and help them to get over this bridge if they weren't already open. And I think that's the second implication. I think what the government and what the industry has basically said is patients, providers, the whole industry is basically saying, look, we need to be more open. And you know, we've tried the route of self-regulating and propelling our own selves to be open. Now the government is taking a step to say, no, we're all going to be open now. And we're all going to try to get to a place where we can share data freely. And so anybody who is already on this sort of openness pathway, and there are some vendors that have always been this way, but they're going to be the ones in the leadership position because they're going, yeah, you know what, we're already there. I mean, this is not going to be very difficult to comply. And I think those people are finally going to get the highlight and the accolades, if you will, that they deserve, because they're going to be like, yeah, we're done. We don't have to struggle and divert ourselves in moving away from, we don't have to change our product roadmaps just to match this. We can continue down the path we're already on.
And the big winner is going to be the patient, because I think most of these regulations are about patient centricity and enabling the patient. And unfortunately, I think what's going to happen is this is going to be implemented and patients are going to have big wins over the current system. But ironically, the patients are going to say, wait, you haven't been doing this the whole time. And so it's not going to be satisfying to the patients, even though it's going to be a huge step forward for them.
Totally agree, John. And that, if you can believe it, is another episode. We're at the end. So thanks to all of you who tuned into this episode of Healthcare IT Today. To find out more details about our show, check out the program's page on healthcarenowradio.com. And please share your voice and engage with us on healthcareittoday.com and on Twitter at the hashtag HITSM. I'm Colin Hung, and this is my friend John Lin. Thanks for listening today, and have a great week.